97.5 The Fanatic.
Turn your radios up. Mike's ready to rock.
Yep. It is the Mike Vecelli Show on a Wednesday. This means it's General Knowledge Wednesday. But more importantly, we got football season coming up. And it's time we divert our attention. We have been diverting our attention for football season because of other stuff that's going on. But okay, time to get into it, because the Eagles are in a game where you look at it and you go, they'll win this game against the Washington Football Club, right? They'll win the game. But we've seen many openers that we thought the Eagles would win, especially home openers, where they didn't. And I don't know, for some reason I'm a little nervous about this game. I got a little nervous all of a sudden, because Washington has nothing to lose. They know they stink. They new coach are in transition. They're trying to rebuild everything. So they go out there and they go, well, we don't have any pressure to win. And the Eagles have pressure to win. And I look at the Eagles and now at the Lane Johnson situation, and it looks like Miles Sanders is going to play, but he looks a little banged up. The offensive line now is kind of like strange, because now Peters has to go back to left tackle after not playing but a couple practices there, and Lane Johnson not going to be there, so who's going to start at right tackle? They put Pryor there. I don't know. Well, who plays right guard? It's a mystery right now what their offensive line is going to look like. And for all this supposed new aerial attack, I still have to believe that DeSean Jackson is going to be an impact player, and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is going to be an impact player, and Greg Ward in the slot. And they do it at two tight ends. So if you put a gun to my head, the Eagles win the game. But I'm a little more nervous about this game than I'm sensing that a lot of people are, especially because of the Lane Johnson factor. So we'll talk about the Eagles and other stuff, including the Phillies last night. Split a doubleheader with a lousy team. That team's terrible. And their bullpen blows up in both games. They need a heroic hit by Alec Bohm in game one, and they couldn't get the big hit in game two after they fell behind, and they lose to the Red Sox in game two. The Phillies are going to make the playoffs, so it's hard for me to like get overreact here. But the bullpen, the refigured bullpen, has really not made that much of a difference. I think the collective ERA is like one was 7.8 something, and this one's 7.3 something. So it's been a slight improvement, but not enough to say, wow, they really fixed themselves. But with seven games against the Marlins, I think the worst they can do is 4-3, which puts them still in that second spot, and they'll make the playoffs as the second spot in the National League East. I'm not even worried about that. Are you, Tyron?
Yes.
You are?
Now, after these last two games, I'm worried. Corey Simon from NBC Sports Philly has the stat. The four new guys. So it's about Phelps, because he stunk yesterday.
Yeah.
Workman, Hembry, Hale.
Mm-hmm.
21 and a third innings, 18 runs, 10 home runs, 46 base runners in 21 and a third innings, 7.59 ERA.
7.59.
Those particular guys.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible.
And the Marlins throw, you're going to love these seven games. You'll hate them and love them.
Because they got hard throwers.
These guys throw, all of them throw, they're throwing jet fuel. Sixto Sanchez is striking Braves out at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, they won't get him until when will they get him? Like Monday, right?
No.
When will they get Sixto Sanchez?
I mean, he pitched two.
I think it's at the end of the series is when they get him.
I think they get him Sunday.
Sunday?
I think so. I have to look at it, but he.
All right, so you're worried about the Marlins here?
A little bit, because what if they go 3-4? That basically makes them flat-footed tied coming out of it. So I agree with you, but I think they're going to make it. But this bullpen is so bad. You talk about a team, they were talking about if the Phillies had held all their two-run leads, they'd be like 31-9. And instead, they're like, that's scary.
Listen, the Phillies have some kind of a version of hard throwers. I don't know what it is. I can't figure it out. But they got every relief pitcher they have has to hit nibble spots. You know, and I hate nibblers. You know that
I just hate nibblers.
You
do,
and they couldn't pitch for me. I'd rather go with an inexperienced guy throws 97 than a Tommy Hunter who's a veteran guy throwing 92 trying to nibbly poo. You know,
you hate
I just don't roll with the nibs.
I don't play.
Yeah, so in any event, I think they're going to be fine, though, and make the playoffs. So now we move on to the Sixers. And interesting, we discussed this not on the show, but before the show, the Billy Donovan situation. Because I had been told a couple days ago he was going to be a free agent, that it was not going to be a renewed contract. So sure enough, he's out there. So, I don't know, he's got a decent resume. He's got a better resume than Tyronn Lue does as far as longevity and success in the league. Lue had a big hit, obviously, but Donovan has been a pretty decent coach in this league. I mean, are you interested in Billy Donovan?
I'm interested. He wouldn't be my first choice, but I've been consistent. He's been, obviously, he won multiple championships in college, makes the transition, 5 years, five playoff appearances, and he had, on paper, no one thought. They thought they were going to be in the mix for the first pick in the draft, and instead they make the playoffs and extend that series to a game seven.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has a good resume, and most importantly, he acknowledges that he's going to use a center. Because he used Steven Adams.
Yeah, he's had a center all his time down there.
And that's important,
and
because...
Not an impact center, though. A guy who's just kind of a... Yeah, you know, another guy that you know, not a focus guy.
Not a focus. I think Embiid's going to have to play differently. I think that's going to happen going forward. I think fans are going to be mad. I think he's going to post up less going forward because they're going to have him screening more and doing more stuff. To me, the most important part is he's used to a center playing 30-some minutes a game. And Adams plays big minutes. So he's not a guy that thinks, I have to take my center off the floor to win. And I think that has to be, if you're keeping Simmons and Embiid together, obviously, the first question you have to ask the guy, we're not trading them, how would you use their center? He'll probably have a plan versus a coach who would say, no, what I'd rather do is get rid of them and go five out.
All right, so if you put both those guys on the scale right now, and there could be a name from nowhere. I don't know who they're looking at or who they're going to talk to. But if you got Lue and you got Donovan, where are you riding?
I think Donovan, partially because I know for a fact he'll come up with a way to use Joel Embiid. It's on Joel Embiid to buy in.
Yeah.
It's on him also to get him to buy in. But he'll have a plan to use a center for 30-some minutes. I don't know what Lou's plan is for a big man. Because he's never really had a big man. So I have to deal with reality. Simmons and Embiid are not getting traded. Which of those two do I think would best have a plan to make those guys work together? Probably Donovan.
He also likes guys who fire.
He does.
So, I don't know, if you're looking for somebody to give Ben the fire, maybe who knows who it could be. Either man has to do the same thing. If you don't shoot, Pine City.
He's great. He's also very, it would be a bit of a culture shock. You're going from very few pick and rolls. He pick and rolls teams to death.
Yeah.
I like guys that pick and roll people to death. Miami, these teams, they pick and roll you to death. I think that's how you have to win in this NBA.
Yeah,
and surround him with shooters. And maybe Tobias is better in the pick and roll more. I don't know if you can't trade him. I think that Donovan actually checks a lot of boxes if it's between those two guys. But it also proves that it at least appears that the Sixers are going through the proper search and they're not just handing the job like a lot of people thought. Yeah. And that's what's appropriate.
All right, we'll follow that story. But again, it's Eagle time. The opener is Sunday. All right, the league starts tomorrow night. Yes. So it's been thrust upon us, and we got to respond to it. And of course, as we get to closer to the end of the week, you know, like tomorrow we'll do the Hembo stats, and Brian Westbrook talking about an actual game on Friday. So all that stuff is to come. But I want to tap into it now, that this Eagle season and what you think it's going to be, and especially what's going to happen on Sunday. And are you nervous that they could actually come out of the gate and lose that first game? And it's also General Knowledge Wednesday. And General Knowledge Wednesday has a football slant to it today. So General Knowledge, as you know, is brought to us by Testo North America, the choice of HVAC techs who count on having the most accurate tools in their toolbox. When precision measurements matter, be sure with Testo. We have a $100 gift card in the Bronson giveaway, three of them. So if you get an answer correctly, you'll be in the pile to be chosen to win a $100 gift card in Nebraska. And also a little later, we're going to tell you about an exciting new venture we're going to have. It's called the Fanatic Football Pool, and it literally involves a pool. That's right. I'm just going to, you know, give you a little hint, a little sniff. talk about it a little later. All right, so here are our categories. General knowledge, NFL football by year. We're going to go back to the late 60s through the year 2000 with occurrences in NFL that you have to identify after I give you a hint. And then NFL football combination quarterbacks and wide receivers. And then finally, people in history, A to Z.
Ooh.
All right, so by alphabet, these people in history, after a hint, you must identify them. All right. So Jalen Reagor did practice today. Does that mean he's going to play Sunday?
Don't know. I guess Tim McManus will have to fill you in. Right, this is courtesy of Tim.
All right,
him and Sanders of practicing. Lane Johnson out there, but apparently off to the side.
Okay, we have Tim McManus coming up. Give us that update at 3:30 with Jason Stark on a Phillies update at 4. All kinds of good stuff on General Knowledge Wednesday. Mike Missanelli Show, 97.5, The Fanatic.
The Mike Missanelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
All right, let's see what the real deal is. And we talked to the man who covers the Eagles for ESPN.com. He is on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. His name's Tim McManus. Hello, Timmy.
Mike, how are you? Happy game week.
Yeah, yes, we do finally have a football season upon us here. It kind of jumped up on us, but Sunday against Washington. And so let's first find out how well-stocked the Eagles are for this. Miles Sanders and Lane Johnson, what is their status? Will they starting in this game on Sunday?
Well, both of them were out on the practice field today. Lane Johnson was working during installs as that starting right tackle. Miles Sanders was in pads as well and going through individual drills. By the sound of it, they're just going to be individual drills only for today, so we'll probably be listed as limited participants in practice, but both with the hopes of playing Sunday at Washington. And then there was a bit of kind of surprise news today with Jalen Reagor being out on the field.
Mm-hmm.
He has a 3 to 4 week injury, at least that was the initial diagnosis, with a torn labrum in his shoulder. But the second opinion came back positive from the Eagles' perspective, and they feel like, my understanding is, like, if he misses this game, that'll probably be it. That'll be ready for week 2. But that my thought was, and the way that it was being relayed to me, was that week 1 was probably off the table. But there he was, returning punts and going through individual receiving drills. And so it leaves a little bit of intrigue as to whether they'll have him for this week's game.
Interesting. So I wouldn't expect, well, maybe he will start, I don't know, but as far as we know, the starters will be DeSean Jackson and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside with Ward in the slot. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, that's the way I see it, and I would still, I think the smartest thing would be to keep Reagor out for a week just to be cautious about it. I mean, if he goes out there and on his first punt return gets pulled the wrong way and tears that thing further, then all of a sudden it's not looking like a very smart mm-hmm. decision. But what we saw during training camp was a mix of Arcega-Whiteside and Reagor kind of switching, alternating snaps with Ward and DeSean Jackson as the mainstays. So when all four of those are back, that's what I expect.
All right, so let's look at the right side now, because if Lane Johnson does play, I guess Pryor plays right guard. If Lane can't play, who do they put at right guard, right tackle?
It's a great question. I think what would happen there is that they would swing Matt Pryor out to right tackle. They probably have Nate Herbig in at right guard. And so this is something that they're going to have to feel out as the week goes along to see whether Johnson is going to be available or not. I think either way, Mike, the offensive line could be in some trouble in week 1. Because if you think about it, you know, Peters has been training all offseason at right guard. Now he has just flipped out to left tackle. Johnson has missed the last 9-ish practices. before returning today. And so he's not going to have any flow with what looks to be now a new person on his left. And so the continuity factor is definitely going to be an issue, I think. It's hard to picture them coming out of the gate strong along the offensive fronts with all these moving parts. And, of course, that's especially true if Johnson can't go.
All right, let's sink our teeth into this Jason Peters thing a little bit, because I haven't had a chance to talk to you about it. He walks into the office and says, okay, I'll play left tackle. Now, we were told by the head coach that no. And we like to leave him at right guard, continuity, the whole bit, which we all kind of knew was BS. So what that means to me, and this is what disturbs me about it, is that they were willing, just because they didn't want this so-called parade of players to go to the front office, they were willing to weaken their team by not doing the right thing and making him the left tackle.
I mean, we said at the time that what was being told publicly was not really what was happening behind the scenes, and that was that Peters was standing his ground and was saying that, you know, you signed me to be a right guard, and I want more money to go over and play left tackle. And so maybe there was, who knows what the conversations have been behind the scenes to ultimately lead to Peters saying, you know what, it's game week, I'm going to move over. I guess you can argue that the Eagles played it well because they stood their ground and Peter still moved over. And let's see if he gets a bump in his contract eventually. But yes, the whole thing was not obviously an ideal situation. It was also playing with fire a little bit. And I would say that even to this point, only giving him a handful of practices to reacclimate to the mm-hmm. left tackle position, you know, when he's going up against the likes of Chase Young, I mean, could be a trouble spot for sure this week. So I understand what you're saying, and I think that there's merit to it. I think that the whole thing from both perspectives could have been handled better.
Yeah, it rankles me that they made the money principle more important than the bettering your team principle.
Yeah, and the other side is that Peters maybe prioritized money over that as well.
Yeah, but he's got the clout to do that. See, if it was a regular player, then you got no argument at all. But this dude is, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, has been in the league for 100 years. So if he, you know, like to me, that's the dividing line is really clear. Like this concept that other players are then going to be encouraged to do the same thing. Other players aren't Jason Peters. They don't have that clout, you know, like.
Yeah, no. That argument always, to me, was bogus.
Yeah.
Because there is no precedent, you know, that's going to be established when you're talking about somebody like Jason Peters. He's best friends with Jeffrey Lurie. He's a Hall of Fame player. Like, you know, nobody else is going to be able to walk in and do that. And, yeah, and so I feel like middle ground could have been achieved sooner, for sure. And that would have meant the Eagles moving off of their peg, and maybe they should have done that.
All right, so what do they look like on defense now? Their defensive line. Derek Barnett, what's the story with him as far as Sunday goes?
He was on the field today and looked like to be a limited participant. And so I would say that he's probably he's going to be listed as limited and will probably be a question mark heading into the game. I mean, he hasn't practiced in a long time, Mike. So even if he does get out there, how effective is he actually going to be? So I don't know that I would expect a big contribution from Barnett one way or another week one, which means that it falls to the likes of Vinny Curry to pick up the slack. Josh Sweat, who had a really promising training camp, to get in there and prove that can transition to real actual regular season games. And then Zabon Hargrave was not at practice today. He missed all camp, and he's still not there. He's dealing with a pec injury. And so that means it's going to fall to Fletcher Cox and Malik Jackson. Grant's a pretty good one, too. To really be the centerpieces of that defensive front.
Now, people are looking at this game and they go, okay, this is probably an easy win for a lot of reasons. Number one, Washington's not real good. Number two, they're so discombobulated trying to get, you know, all this stuff that's happened to them, the new coach trying to get stuff together. They're weak. How can the Eagles lose this game?
Yeah, I'm actually flirting with predicting a loss.
Really?
And it's not to say that's how the season will go or that it will reflect their ultimate records. I still think the Eagles would be fine even if they drop this game. But there's two reasons, I guess, that's guiding me in that direction. The first one being the offensive line, which has been well addressed. I just can't see them having a great day against that defensive front right out of the chute when we don't know who's going to be available, we don't know how healthy they're going to be, and we don't know how quickly they're going to coalesce. But to expect them to coalesce that quickly is insane, right? So I think that they're going to have an issue. The second part is that Ron Rivera is coming in with his brand new staff, and there hasn't been any preseason, and there's no tape on these guys. And so the Eagles are kind of preparing blindly to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And so I think those two factors could lead to an upset win on the road in Washington. Mm. You know, and again, I don't think that means, oh, they're not going to the playoffs or they're in the deep trouble, but I could see this being a trouble spot just because of those two factors.
Yeah, I was starting to think that way, and I'm going, I can't see that. Like, I can see the Eagles winning on a fourth quarter field goal, but I just can't see them losing this game.
I know. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, certainly the other side is, you know, it's Washington.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't believe it that this team is going to be ready enough. Yeah, you know, they haven't had enough prep with this new guy to actually be in sync with anything. But I guess anything can happen in this league. So, all right, sounds good. Anything else we need to know,
Mike? I think we got it all.
We got it all
laid out.
All right, sounds good, Timmy. Always a pleasure, and we got some football coming up.
Yes, sir. Can't wait. Looking forward to it all season long with you, Mike.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you.
I'm out.
There he is, Tim McManus on the Comcast Business Hotline,
the Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
He is, of course, the great Hall of Fame writer, now writing for The Athletic, among other ventures. The great Jason Stark is brought to us by DraftKings. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Mike. How are you, my friend?
Well, let's see what we have here, right? I mean, I don't want to get too carried away with criticizing them not winning a doubleheader over Boston. They probably should have, but they've been playing good baseball, despite the fact that their bullpen really hasn't helped out that much. So what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how we talked about this last week, how those trades felt like they had at least stabilized that pen, but the performance wasn't reflecting that, and it's still not. The bullpen's ERA is still 7.24 for the year. 7.24. And, I mean, since the modern save rule, there's no team in National League history that's ever even been within two runs of that and win a postseason series, right? So, it's bizarre. It's bizarre to try to cover a flaw that's glaring.
Yeah, and how they've been covering is they haven't had any trouble scoring runs, and so I don't know. Unless this whole thing dries up, they're going to be a team that looks like is going to score runs.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're a top six offense in the major leagues, and their rotation, at least 1-2-3, is certainly playoff worthy. It's worthy of a playoff team. It's just how much of the good stuff can the bullpen undo? Well, so far, a lot. But in a year where 16 teams are going to make it, they don't have much excuse not to make it with a team like this.
Yeah, I agree. So I don't fret. But here comes seven games to the Marlins now.
Right.
I don't know how to read this. What could possibly happen? The Phillies are a better overall team than the Marlins, are they not?
Oh, they're definitely more talented than the Marlins, top to bottom. I mean, like, when you start thinking about what's happened to the Marlins since the last time the Phillies played them, it's crazy. You know, that week after the pandemic delay, the Marlins had to make 40 roster moves. So that team that they got off to that 10-3 start with, that wasn't even their real team. It was a bunch of guys that they collected off the waiver wire, walking around the streets, and now they're back to phasing in what was supposed to be their actual team. And I don't know what to make of them. And I've always thought they've got good arms.
Yeah.
They got better arms now that Sixto Sanchez is there.
Yes.
But how talented the team is on the field, their team versus the Phillies team, I don't think there's much comparison.
Let's talk about Sixto. Listen, we all know how coveted a prospect he was, but I don't think the Phillies were that heartbroken when they got JT for him. Now, did they anticipate that he was going to blossom this soon?
You know, you and I used to talk about him before that trade 3-4 years ago, so there was never any doubt that he could be this guy. Never any doubt of that. The question was, you know, he had trouble staying on the field. He wasn't always making that much progress. The results didn't always match the stuff. You know, there are a lot of guys with great stuff in the minor leagues who never turn into aces. And if you have a chance to trade for the best catcher in the major leagues and you're trying to win, you need to win, your front office has a mandate to win, the trade for the catcher is a trade that you make. Doesn't mean that you can't be haunted by what you give up. And this guy, he certainly has a chance to haunt them. You know, 45 pitches already at 99 or faster. 45.
Yeah, here's my weakness. I prize an ace ahead of almost everybody, even like maybe a 40 home run guy. Well, maybe not, but you know, an ace is important to me. So, like, right. Let's just have a barroom convo here. If we had a chance right now to reverse that trade, would reversing it be the right thing or the wrong thing?
Well, I'd be glad you know the answer to that if you knew how the season was going to turn out.
Yeah, I get it. And you don't know how the JT free agent thing. But let's just pretend everything is even. What's more...
Like in a perfect world, if you're just making these decisions based on... Like as if it's a math equation. And it's not something that's happening in real life where people like you and me are perusing every move. You don't ever make that trade. 2 years of control of a catcher for a potential ace that you can control for 7 years, you would never do that. If you're looking at the math, you would never say that makes mathematical sense. Mm-hmm. But wasn't there pressure to win? Like, wasn't that pressure to win a big force in why they made that deal?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was.
I understand that at the time you have to act. I'm just like playing with the concept now because I love an ace that throws 100. I love that because I don't have to worry about that ever.
There's not that many of them walking
exactly
around the planet.
Exactly.
Right? And you know, you and I, it's funny, you and I used to talk about this. This was like even 4 years ago when the Phillies system was looked at as being one of the better ones. And what do we always used to say? There's a lot of players there who will play in the major leagues. There's almost no stars.
Yeah.
The one guy with star power was this guy.
Yeah.
You know? This is before they drafted Alec Bohm, before they drafted Spencer Howard. Sisto Sanchez was the one player in the system with a chance to be a perennial all-star. And now he's got a chance to do that for some other team.
Yeah. When does he face the Phillies in this series?
Well, he just pitched yesterday. I believe they're off today, right? So it's likely Monday is what it feels like.
Okay, so we got to wait that long next time. All right. Yep. Now, you brought Bohm. We got to talk about him because here's the thing I noticed about him. He always keeps his hands inside the ball, and he's got great pitch recognition. Like, he was unfazed by two decent curveballs in that at bat yesterday.
That's right.
When he hits the ball to left field, he hit the other one to right field. But he was on both of them. And like, his pitch recognition for a kid that young, I haven't seen him get fooled, really. He missed a couple fastballs, but he hasn't been fooled. What are they saying about him?
Yeah, you know, I had a conversation with one of their guys about him a few days ago, and we got onto an interesting topic. He has pretty much the lowest launch angle in that whole lineup because he doesn't have that big uppercut swing. And you know what's noteworthy? They've left him alone. Now, I want you to think about how the previous regime was approaching hitters. And you tell me what would have happened. I think it's impossible to believe that they would have allowed a guy with that swing without the big uppercut to keep doing it the way he does it. But Like, this regime understands that's what allows him to wait so long and allows him to let the ball travel and then drive it all over the field. And I think that's a sign of how talented he is, but I think it's also a sign of the impact this coaching staff has made that the previous staff was unmaking.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to evolve a little bit because I think they would like to get like 35 home runs out of the kid, and he may have to change his. He's got his hands close and up rather than in a power hitting position. So I think that'll evolve a little bit.
Yeah, but he's such a talented hitter. I mean, like just his approach in those big spots. He's hitting .458 with runs in scoring position and more walks than strikeouts. Like he doesn't get fooled. He doesn't swing and miss. He doesn't go out of his comfort zone. Mm-hmm. He completely has a plan for how to approach big at-bats. Well, I wouldn't touch that.
Yeah.
That is an important commodity in today's game.
Yeah, no, you're right. All right, so what are they going to do about center field these days? They don't want to grind up Harper, but it looks like they're going to have to for a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Bryce on many levels, but I mean, Joe indicated after the doubleheader last night, it didn't seem like Scott Kingery is close to coming back. Because of McCutcheon's knee injury, they don't want to put him out there. Roman Quinn's gone through their concussion protocol, so he's still a little ways away. I mean, they're going to have to mix and match like this, do it like this for a while. I mean, it's incredible that you've got 60 players in your player pool, and they're just no outfielders. That's why they're in the situation they're in. You run into this roster bind where if you have to take somebody out of that pool, you're going to lose them. So they're in a bind.
I know they added them, but is there any chance that they try Moniak up here?
I haven't heard that.
Okay. All right. That's Tyrone's guy. He wanted to hear a positive on that. That's why I asked him. He's a big Moniak guy.
I don't think he's ready for that.
All right.
I don't think so.
All right, Jason, always great stuff, man, and we'll talk to you next week.
Mike, always a pleasure. Happy football season.
You too, buddy. There's Jason Stark, brought to us by DraftKings.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.